We'll open our meeting at 7:03. I'll be doing the invocation, and Mr. Fuller will be doing the salute. Dear Lord, be with us this evening as we make decisions that will affect the students' lives. Be with the open house that's going on at West Covina. Make it successful and keep everybody safe there. In his name we pray. Amen.
Ready, begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call.
Mrs. Wallace?
Here.
Mr. Fuller?
Here.
Mr. Kent?
Here.
Mr. Fox?
Here.
Mr. Schumacher?
Here.
Mr. Meehan? Mrs. Lace-Lacida?
Here.
There's one item to report from closed session. It's the full expulsion of student number 179016. For possession and sale of a controlled substance. It was moved by Jessica Shoemaker and seconded by Steve Cox to expel the following students. The vote was 3, no, with the 2 no votes being Steve Cox and George Fuller.
3 affirmative votes, right?
Yes.
And 2 negative.
Did I say it the other way?
Yes. You said
3-2.
Oh.
Yeah,
3-2. It was also moved by George Fuller and Steve Cox to expel the following 2 students, 173305 and 175975. The vote was unanimous on both of these. Board members report.
Had the opportunity to attend HSA last Thursday with our PTA council, and the many awards are given. It was good to see Mr. Mandela at the podium on his own volition with his own words, and very grateful that our prayers have been answered. Thank you.
Any further reports? Our board student, I'm sure, is at the open house supporting all the students that are there, and I'm sure she's assigned very many jobs. She's and she'll be missed this evening. I have no blue cards in front of me for public speaking. Was there anybody who wished to address the board at this time? Seeing no one, that will move us on to the organizational part of our meeting. Is there anything anyone would like to take off of consent?
Item 11.
Is there anything anyone would like to add?
5.
No.
It's not on consent?
But no, it's not on consent.
Mr. Spence asked to keep it off.
No, it's off already.
It is remaining off. Is there a motion to move the agenda as amended?
I'll move.
Second.
It was moved by George Fuller and seconded by Steve Cox to approve the agenda as amended and consent items for for this meeting. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? It passes unanimously. That brings us to item number 5. Ms. Castillo, do you have anything to...
Thank you. Board members, as you know, our general counsel is on a year-to-year contract with the district. It has been that way for as far back as I can see in our records. And one of the things I wanted to say about general counsel and any counsel for our district is that we oftentimes have needs for people who are special experts in different areas. And one of the things that we have noted on the business side is that there are times where we have to go out and search for a particular type of counsel, and we are able to do that. So two things I want you to keep in mind. One is that at any point in time, a retainer can be for multiple agencies, one agency, for different specialties, etc. The board president and I had a chance to meet with the partners of Lozano Smith and found that they have 80 attorneys up and down the state. They work in teams in terms of the way they approach their advice, their legal fees, and I looked at everyone surrounding our district, both large and small districts, and it appears that everything is within the same ranges in terms of expenses. One of the things that, and I'll let Board President speak, but one of the things that I found interesting in speaking with the partners of Lozano Smith is their answers to our questions, regardless of whether it was special education or facilities or contract language or due process. They have a lot of experience on their staff and a lot of people who I believe can research and do a lot of the processes. Our district has been very fortunate that we have not experienced huge issues, and when we have in relationship to the law, we've done very well with the issues. But things are getting more and more complicated in terms of many of the areas, whether it be facilities or special ed or even day-to-day contract language. So we brought forward this recommendation so that we can access Lozano Smith for about, you know, a year, and then assess whether that change was of benefit to us.
Questions? Mr. Spence?
Does this mean that we're not going to be using our current general counsel, Margaret Tridester and Associates, anymore?
Correct. Her contract actually expires.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'll move this item.
I'll second.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? It passes unanimously. Mike Spence moved it, and Jessica Shoemaker seconded it. The information report.
Okay, board members, we wanted to bring to you just another progress report. The board had asked that as we develop our RTI program, that we bring you progress reports, and we would like to share with you some of our thinking that may shape things for services for our students next year. And so we have asked Jan Pickett and Cheryl and Tandy to be here tonight to present to you our thinking at this time and our progress at this time. Jan?
Office staff have been reading up on attending in-services and so forth to learn about the best practices out there for response to intervention. So we've had some time to really think this through, and one thing we've learned is that for this to work well, there needs to be a very strong collaboration between special education and general education people. And Candy and Cheryl are here tonight to kind of exemplify that as they talk to you about what our plans are for September in our elementary schools. So,
Tandy and Cheryl? I'll wait till you get your hand out.
It should.
Of course it should.
It never works.
It hasn't worked since George said moved over here. It used to work when since
Candy
was here, it worked all the time.
Steve touched it.
No, I think. Everyone has a copy?
No, it's the computer screen, not your copy.
Plenty of copies.
Okay, go ahead.
That's all right. Well, for those of you that don't have enough alphabets in your acronyms, we have another one for you, RTI, a response to intervention. You'll be hearing that a lot. And we know you're fairly aware of what RTI is, but we just want to kind of go over what the goals are. And one is to improve that academic achievement for all students and in maximizing our existing staff and also to implement effective interventions at the school sites.
I didn't bend down.
As you already know, RTI is a multi-tiered approach that helps struggling students. We closely monitor their progress to determine if there's needed additional interventions. And this is for both general education students and special education students. This multi-tier, there's three levels. And the first tier is just that good quality instruction. This services generally 85 to 90% of our student population. This is a high-quality, scientifically-based research curriculum in which we have established at each of our schools, but it also allows for the differentiation, which what means is basically if you have a student that needs just a retaught of a specific skill or concept, the teacher is able to stop and revisit that for a student in order for them to grasp it in a reasonable amount of time. During this time in Tier 1, we also would screen, a universal screening, of all students on a high correlation of skills and strategies for academic success. And what that is usually phonemic awareness, phonics, comprehension, and fluency. During the screening, students that we find that need this intervention would then move on to Tier 2. Tier 2 is an increasingly intensive instruction and intervention that's short, targeted, and focused. This could be during school, but this could also be after school or during, before, after, and during school. The intervention is then matched towards their identified need that's done through the universal screening, and then monitoring of this performance and rates of progress is monitored to ensure that they're making that adequate progress. As you know, not all students learn in the same rate. So this is for approximately anywhere from 10 to 15% of the student population. But then you find that there are students that need additional services, that they need something a little bit more, which then we've moved to Tier 3. Now, Tier 3 is where special ed and general education really become handholders and that we're together and collaborating, because this is more the individualized, intensive interventions for the students that are struggling that's focused really on a deficit skill where there's a significant gap, that the students need something very intensive for them, but maybe not work in the small group setting. This also helps prevent more severe problems. Hopefully, at this stage, if a student is really struggling, then we would have that hand-holding opportunity then to identify, do we really need to look at the student who may qualify then for special education services? But as we move through the tiers, then really what the prevention is or the opportunity is not to misidentify students who are really general ed students because they didn't get what they needed early on. Through all of this, what is really critical is that assessment. As I said, that universal screening in which you look at the skills and strategies that have the high correlation for academic success, it's not just done once. It's done periodic through their early years and as they move through the grades, and usually through about grade 6. It's monitoring their progress, which is currently our benchmarks. Are they making adequate progress on their standards and their achievement goals? And through this all, by using these two assessments, the monitoring and the screening, is that database decision-making, knowing each child individually, what do they need, and how do we target to provide them the best optimal learning for them. Cheryl is now going to talk about the plan that we have to implement for 2009 and 10 as we move forward with the RTI model.
Okay, so our plan is to start with the elementary schools, and we want to form that collaboration. We also want to maximize the resources we have. We're talking about restructuring our model, providing professional development for those involved, and then implementing these interventions and assessments, which are part of RTI. So the first thing that we would like to do is provide a full-time RSP teacher at each elementary site. And expand the role of that RSP teacher. So they would be consulting with general ed teachers for the students that they have that are possibly at risk or in need of other services. They would also provide the intensive remediation services for the students in Tier 3. They would participate in monitoring the progress and assist with SSTs and making recommendations. And they would also monitor the performance of the instructional assistants who are providing services to the students. One of the things that this would do is to increase our general ed participation for our students in special education. And this is something that parents have brought up recently at IEPs and just through phone calls that they're interested in more participation for the special ed students in the general ed setting. This would give the students access to the core curriculum, to the quality teaching that is in our general ed classes, and they also would be at their neighborhood schools with their peers. We would also use instructional assistants, some of whom would be general ed or regular ed instructional assistants, and some would be special ed, and they would both be providing these targeted research-based interventions. So a training component would go into that. We have started in the last 2 years training the instructional assistants in various parts of performing the services for special ed students, so we don't want them to just be passing out papers or walking around the classroom or grading papers. We want them to be able to work with students and to feel trained in their ability to do that, both academically and behaviorally.
So as we look to next year, our next steps are basically identifying that universal screening that we're going to use, as well as the intervention curriculum. This doesn't necessarily mean purchasing anything new. We have a lot of wonderful things in this district that we're not systemically implementing at each school. One of the things in the elementary schools that we have is the Orchard program that has fabulous assessments in it, as well as targeted lessons that help students accelerate and or remediate in areas. Also providing that professional development, as Cheryl had said, but not just for the instructional aides, but is also for the principals, so they understand the model and how to support the teachers, as well as how to ensure that the implementation model is being followed. The teachers, so they have an understanding of how to service all the students that are in their classes effectively. And then, as Cheryl said, is the instructional aides, providing them with targeted, purposeful training so that they know how to then support the students that they're servicing. And last, obviously, is that monitoring and establishing those protocols. As we know, what gets measured gets done. And if we set this up correctly and monitor it and track it, then what we're doing is ensuring success for all of our students in the best possible atmosphere. So we thank you for your time.
Questions? Yes. Mike?
Can you give me an example of what do you mean by universal screening? What kind of things are out there that would do universal screening?
Absolutely. One of the most common one is called the DIBELS. And what that does is it tracks for how quickly in 1 minute a student can identify all letters. Or if I said the word airplane, put it together, can they actually blend the word fluency? So DIBELS is one. There's also the Peabody, which is through Vanderbilt University.
So we would do that with every child? Is that the idea?
Correct. And so a first grade student would have a different expectation of how fast they would recognize the letters.
So do we test students every year, or would we just test new students?
We would test every student multiple times in the year for kindergarten, first grade, second grade, third grade, fourth grade. It's not as often, but you'd want a minimal of two different assessments, because when a student arrives in kindergarten, they can score very well, but then you can see a slide,
yeah.
Right? So each grade level would have a standard of what we would look at.
Okay. Well, I appreciate this level of detail coming to us at the board level. I appreciate it very much. Thank you.
Mr. Floyd.
I like the idea that you're going to ensure that RSP teachers are not just walking around the room and grading papers or things of this nature. How are you going to make sure that happens? Where is site administration going to fit in this? And how are we going to deal with the second grade teacher that for 30 years has not had another teacher in the room? And God bless it, this is not going to be this year either. How are we going to deal with that?
Multiple ways. First of all, it comes down to training principals and understanding what the role is. It's educating the teacher about what that role is and educating the instructional aide. Principals have made a huge effort, and I know Ms. Castillo has talked about it, is being in the classrooms frequently. And if there's noted problems, then the principal would be able to address it at that time. I think when it comes to instructional assistants or even the resource teacher, when they know their role in the classroom, they're able to be productive. When the teacher knows what their role is, they're able to use that person and collaborate. I think what has happened sometimes in the past with anything, not just in this district, but we come up with a great idea and we throw these people together, but we don't always provide the support and training. And what we're proposing is providing them with their specific roles and training to be successful.
And I agree with you, because I came from a career, you could not leave your training unless you demonstrated the ability to collaborate, whether you saw eye to eye with the person or not, into education where that doesn't necessarily exist if you've kind of been on your own. And I'm wondering how we're going to address that we can bring together a team on this.
I believe in our district we've done a very good job is opening those doors and bringing that collaboration in many areas of in the education field within West Covina, and I feel that we'll be able to build upon that. I think Cheryl would probably agree that the teachers generally have a very good relationship. I can't say it's perfect because, you know, there are personalities, but a very good relationship because it's all about the students and doing what's right for students. And I feel that our teachers believe that. I mean, we have wonderful teachers in this district. Our instructional aides are very much student-centered, and we know our principals are too. So I think as we move forward in this is breaking down some of those barriers because it can be scary. And giving them, when you understand what you need to do, you're able to target and focus on that.
But overall, I'm impressed. Thank you.
Impressed. Mr. Cox?
Is this a new program, new approach? If so, how are we paying for this? How is this different than what we're already doing in the classrooms? And I've got another question. Go ahead.
Yeah. Excellent questions. I think I was having a conversation with Cheryl when I first started teaching. It was, how do we assess kids and get them in out?
Yeah.
And I don't want to see them and let them go into a room. And we've kind of hidden. And as we become more knowledgeable and savvy about student learning and student rights and what's right, you know, good for them, in education we have evolved. Parents have also become much more understanding of the system of knowing that I don't want my child in an isolated room. I want them still part of the program and the services that they need help in. I want the help, but I don't want to isolate them. So I think we've grown up in education. So is this different? In a way it is, but it's also as we've become knowledgeable as educators. How are we going to pay for it is maximizing much of this the things that
so
we have in our
district. So it's not a categorical program. It's not a special education program.
No, it's just realigning our resources to maximize.
So describe for him, what does the research teacher do now? Are they split between schools? Explain to him the model now versus the model that you're recommending.
Okay, right now at the elementary school, we have a half-time RSP teacher at each elementary site, and they're split two assignments. So they go from one school to another school. Sometimes it's two elementary schools. We have kind of an uneven number, so some of them are split with the middle school. So they're not really there enough time to provide a full range of services to students. So what I'm finding is often students are in a more restrictive environment, you know, be it an SDC class perhaps, because of the time allocation in our special program. So we're reallocating time is what we're doing. We're not hiring new teachers. We're just reconfiguring.
But you're talking about taking from half, you're adding 4 hours
right.
across the board.
Right. So some of the teachers who are now teaching an SDC class, that time would be reallocated to RSP services.
It reorganizes the entire program at the elementary so that you would take both RSP teachers and SDC teachers and make sure that a school has a comprehensive program at each school rather than an SDC here, this RSP goes to different schools. So what we're trying to really do is provide each school with the services with the same individuals so that we can have better implementation.
Okay. You mentioned the Orchard program, didn't you? Okay. And where... typically, is this implemented in each classroom, typically, or is this?
It's not systemically being implemented throughout the district at this time. We do have the ACES program, who's using it as part of.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, sorry. As part of that, are you asking what would it look like next year with the rollout, or what is currently happening?
Well, a little bit of both.
Okay, so currently it's not equal across the board because we have not had the systemic training on how to utilize that. For next year, we would teach everybody. And the Orchard program is a computer-based program. in which students log on, they take an assessment around their standards in which it generates then data that says this is where a student is good at and this is where the areas that they have need. For someone that is a Tier 1 student, where that good instruction is pretty much enough, they may not utilize the Orchard program. A student that is a Tier 2 student who needs additional assistance may then be targeted around, let's say, comprehension. They're going to use that Orchard program to go in, and I can say Cameron, here's an example, has a before-school program and an after-school program in which they've assessed every student, they now know where they're at, and they've targeted them on their deficit area in order to focus in on the area they need, and they track that progress, which is the model that we would use for next year.
So at Cameron, then, you used that example, and that's one of the schools we haven't implemented.
Correct.
Where is it? Is it done in every classroom?
Right now, this is done before and after school. And then
physically located where exactly at the school is it being done? Is it in every? Is there a computer in every classroom?
There are computers in every classroom, yes. Cameron has a lab, so they generally bring large number of students into their student lab to do this.
Where is that? And that's at the, well, the computer lab?
Computer lab, correct. So depending on the situation at each school.
Will then the RSP teacher be involved with doing that then for the kids that are using it at the lab? I'm just, who monitors it at when all the kids are at this? Is it all 17 or 17 kids at this lab? Who does that?
Their teacher.
Their
teacher. It isn't a lab that's staffed. It's the teacher goes in.
Correct.
And uses the Orchard program to support instruction.
Or the other...
In their classrooms. And then they have a schedule that they rotate in and out. They sign up to go in and out. Correct?
So, but if you only had 17, then are we talking classes of 20 only that go? Or are we talking the 35 and have 18 that are absorbed in the other classrooms?
At Cameron, I mean, conceptually, I'm not sure if you want conceptual or you want what is currently happening. Next year,
well,
Cameron has
this?
A lab of 42.
What is this? Is this currently or conceptually?
This is for next year.
Okay. So.
Right. So for the future.
Yeah.
Cameron, who has a lab, then students that would be Tier 2, then that small group instruction. We would bring a group of students together that need something very similar because they need instruction. It's not just the computer program. So they would get instruction, and then the computer program would help support to allow that practice.
Sure.
Because a teacher, you know, although they really want to, whether they have 20, 32, they cannot do every child individually in the classroom. So the Orchard program would allow to support that. But the instructional assistants would basically be running the small groups after training of how to set that up, how to monitor, and the resource teacher would also help monitor it.
So I guess... Are we going to be adding then personnel next year?
No. No. These are the personnel that are already in our district. We have instructional assistant ones in regular ed program that have been smattered throughout the district that we're going to bring together, provide the training in which then they'll be at each school then to help assist the RTI model. So we're right now, Merlinda has two. We would reallocate. They have two-hour aides.
Okay, so what we've done is we've put all our resources together and we've designed a program to reorganize those resources to meet our ITI goals. Okay, so existing positions, existing resources. Someone may be doing one thing this year, next year it's going to look different. It's still the same classification, the same hours, everything. They just move into a program that is going to be vital for us and our students based on rolling out RTI. So none of this adds resources, it reorganizes them.
Are you finished?
Yeah.
In Tier 2, you said there would be 10 to 15% of the population. How many in Tier 3?
2 to 5% approximately. And that's from research. That's not me.
And that's fine. I'm just trying to get a handle on this. And that does not include the special ed population then?
Tier 3, and actually anywhere in those tiers, would include special education as appropriate.
Okay. And so then if the special education student's getting it, is it written into their IEP goals? How is it determined when and where they're going to get the RTI?
Well, I think it's how we're maybe describing RTI, because RTI is sort of a fluid sort of intervention. So when we say 85 to 90%, that might be in Tier 1. At some point, some of those students may go up to Tier 2 and then go back to Tier 1. So identified special education students, that would be considered a Tier 3 intervention, and that would be written into the IEP.
But then there's 7% of the students in special ed, and you said that there's only two in our district, and there's only 2 to 5 in Tier 3. So not all students are going to be...
All students?
Not all special education students are going to be in Tier 3 then.
Because you have SDC.
All special education students, well, typically all special education students at this point are receiving Tier 3 interventions. However, for example, there may be a student with a particular classification. I'm just going to pull one out, autism. That student might not need intensive services. They might need support in general ed because their academics are moving along, so they don't need that intensive remediation. They need support in a different way. So there's, you know, it depends on what students are eligible, what services they need, whether they need that intensive academic or not. So it's going to look very different.
Then there's a good chance that there are going to be more than 5% in that tier if we're including the special ed students.
Right.
Are all students going to go to their neighborhood school now?
Yes.
And what students won't be going to their neighborhood school, and where will they be going?
At the elementary level, the hope would be, and this, we would go through the IEP process to do this, but the hope would be if we can provide the services that need to be provided for that student at the elementary school, their home school, they would stay there. If they need more intensive services, more than 50% of the day, those, what I'll call SDC classes, would be located at, say, 5 elementary schools. So those students would still be going to an SDC at another site, potentially.
And we don't know where the special day classes are going to be at this point?
I have an idea, but I don't think it's known.
Because you said we were going to do away with some, to merge the...
Yes, yeah. Well, the goal that we have is to have more students receiving their needs educational program at their school. Okay. But depending on a student's IEP, we may not meet everyone's need. So we know there's going to be less SDC. We just don't know yet until we look at each IEP, which is what Cheryl's doing, making sure that they're updated and all that, so that we can meet with the parents and meet with the group to make the decisions. On purpose, we haven't done that because we want to make sure to go through the process before we identify how many classes we're going to need and where they're going to be. But the goal is to have more students, both in general ed and special ed, at their neighborhood school.
One of the reasons you said that the students were going to have, through with this new format, that students were going to now have access to core curriculum. They have access. All students, I hope, have access to core curriculum now.
They do.
So that's really not a benefit.
I think the benefit that Tandy is referring to, and because of, it's very lengthy, but let me try to explain it. When we adopt programs like Orchard, we always start out with small group instruction in terms of how we use it. So when we enticed people to look at Orchard, we did it through a very clever financial arrangement with the YACES, right? We're trying to see if that program supplements learning and who it's having a positive effect on. As we get through this year, we'll be able to see which students were on and what effect it had. What kids needed it, what kids, you know, what we remedied as a result of the use of Orchard. So if we find that some of our students who had an IEP that said X had benefited from that, those kids will be having, not that the rest aren't, but those kids will be having in their IEPs that this is another supplement to their instruction, which is missing now. You see what I'm saying?
Well, my concern about this particular slide was that it said that they were going to access to core curriculum. And I just want to make it very clear that our students already have access to the core curriculum. They may be benefiting from it in a different way, and more in a regular education type setting,
right.
But they do have access now to the core curriculum.
And you said something very important right there. It's in the regular education setting. Many of our students, that are removed from the situation. So they're receiving core curriculum, but it's not in the general setting, and many of our students are capable of receiving it in the general setting.
I just wanted to make sure that that was clarified.
It's a very good point. Very good point.
Let's see, what majors do you... you were talking about the different things you were going to major. When it's a special education student, are you looking at different majors because they have an IEP than you are for the student that hasn't been identified?
Right, and I obviously refer to Cheryl, but, you know, special education follows specific protocols and measurements of which they do, and they track their IEP goals. When we're talking about when we first do that universal screening, I mean, obviously we have students that come in with IEPs, but there's not a lot. And generally in special education is you had to have that discrepancy before you got the intensive services. With the RTI model, it allows us to identify students earlier to get the interventions to then prevent students from being misidentified as learning disabled or other some other kind of handicap just because they didn't get that extra intervention at the primary level. So yes, we would continue to use the special education screenings as appropriate and testing, and then we would do the general education.
And
but
when will it be determined that a student needs to be assessed for special ed?
I think that would always still go through the student study team or the student intervention team. The similar, you know, the process that we're using now, the data that we'd get from the RTI model would let us be more knowledgeable about where the student's deficits are, whether or not the intervention program is working. And then to make that, I mean, I've worked in special education as
right.
well. And so, I mean, obviously, if there's a great need, no, you have to go through all these levels. There's a path to go when it's appropriate. But we also don't want to misidentify and
right.
throw students into that. Because RTI is not just about the academics. Sometimes it's also about the behavior and having interventions to allow a student to be successful in the classroom because of behaviors, because they're very capable academically.
Well, it sounds like it's going to be a wonderful program. And I look forward to seeing it next year, and I know you guys are going to do a great job with it. Mr. Fuller.
Just a quick couple of follow-up questions. Number one, let me understand, but on the IEP, you assess, find if there's any discrepancy, then you write the goal, then you figure out time, and out of there, the teacher makes the instructional model, right?
For some eligibility issues.
Right. In other words, we wouldn't write into an IEP for next year to get step two or tier two. That we would move a child as they needed to up and down.
Mm-hmm.
Another one, we would be assessing like DIBELS. We would include all students to see progress, whether regardless of their classification. And number three, right now, the discrepancy model is, what, 3 years lagging? Will we be able to move away from that and pick up a quicker discrepancy, say a year at first grade, if we need to with an assessment and not have to wait the full 3 years before we do a discrepancy and move a child in the special ed if necessary?
Basically, I think the difference between the two is there isn't any set amount of years, but it's a fairly complicated formula that we're using at this point. So if we move away from that, we haven't moved away from that yet because we don't have anything in place. If we move away from that, then we're working off of whether a student is making progress with interventions. So it would be at the point when a student is not making progress when the interventions are not working.
So we could pick a child up at first grade, say at the end of first grade or 6 months in the first grade that was lacking in terms of progress and be able to address that child much quicker,
right.
But in addition keep other children out that perhaps could benefit with further intervention.
We would be addressing them much quicker. It may not be a special ed
right.
addressing. It might be a general ed addressing through the RTI, you know, the interventions that we have in place.
Mm-hmm.
So it really gives us more latitude in a sense for providing specialized services to students.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
The student board member has arrived, and I'm going to give her this opportunity to share with us what may be happening at the high school.
Okay, so right now, currently at West Covina, we have our open house happening right now. And I just want to say that over this past weekend, our drumline won first at their competition, and our choir also took silver at their competition in San Diego. And also, Thursday at Bethany Baptist Church is our choir musical happening. And this Saturday, it's pretty big. It's our leadership symposium, and this is when we invite all 8th graders who are interested to come, and we show them introduction to campus life, all the organizations, activities, sports, everything that they can or want to join. And that is pretty much it.
Sounds like you're going to be busy.
Yeah.
And that was this Friday, the 8th grade.
That event is happening this Saturday at school.
On Saturday. Okay. Thank you so much. Now we'll move on to item number 10, resolution for reduction in force.
Madam President, board members, in order to meet the increasing budget constraints imposed upon the district's budget by the financial condition of the state of California, we have looked carefully at how to be able to maintain programs, maintain our employees, and look at ways to save money, which is a very difficult thing to do. After assessing our needs and looking at our goals, we've tried to align the use of our resources to, you know, try to accelerate the meeting of those goals. As you know, our goals are to reach 800 by the year 2010, and we are concerned about the impact of the budget should we not, you know, safeguard those things that we think mostly impact instruction in the classroom. So we are recommending a reduction in hours and some changes in some of the positions listed in your board report. And if you have any question, Mrs. Kaufman is here to answer them.
Questions? Mr. Spence?
Yeah, I had some questions about a couple of the layoffs that we're talking about today. I wanted to, and we had a discussion, I know, at our last meeting a little bit about the process, which I wasn't completely happy about. But I had a question based on what we heard about tonight with RTI. We're going to discontinue 3 instructional assistant special ed positions. And I know that's not a lot of hours, but I'm just trying to figure out where were those at or what were they doing. Because when I hear the RTI model, I see much more stuff going on. You know, I see much more.
Yeah.
So
no.
I'm just trying to get an idea.
Before we answer that one, she will answer that part. I want to explain to you that some of the aides that we've had, and Tandy can also explain this, some of the aides that we've had are moving into training for RTI and delivery of RTI. And so the program of RTI is going to take resources that were as in a position of an aide, but my feeling is that it didn't have the impact on the program that we wanted, and by moving them into RTI would greatly affect our ability to meet our goals. So that's in general. What you see here are reductions, but you're also going to see that every position has an ability to reorganize in within its class to another purpose. Okay, so they would have it would still be an aide. Would still be an aide.
I understand. You're talking about the people.
Yes.
I understand how the people within it works. I understand all that.
Gotcha.
I'm trying to deal with the services that we provide kids.
Okay.
That's where I'm at. I understand how it all works. People can bump. They can take the lesser job, or the people bump all the way down.
No.
Is that what you're talking about?
No.
What are you talking about? Organizing
within
positions?
No. It's been purposefully designed. The way that you're describing it, in my opinion, would not be the best way for us to take action. What we have done is looked at the goals of our program, the people that serve our district, their classification, mm-hmm. and how they could best be reorganized to meet our needs.
Okay.
Now, that doesn't mean the usual bumping. It does not mean that.
Okay.
However, when it becomes a special ed position that's vacant and we could close it and save money, we did that.
Right, but did we create another position then to deal with this RTI stuff?
No, because because what I'm trying to explain is that when you have these instructional aides that were doing other things and they're now moving into serving the RTI program, meaning general ed and special ed, there wasn't a need to fill that position. So that position is not there, but there's a whole 10 people going into the program. So where we could save money, we saved money by closing vacancies.
But then we created other positions?
No. Where we had vacancies, we closed vacancies to save money. And then where we had people that we could realign to a program to help us meet our needs, we did that.
Okay, are we still calling the RTI folks, are we still calling them special instructional assistant special education? Do they have a new designation?
They're instructional assistant ones, and that's the people that we'll be using in the RTI model.
Okay, so they're instructional assistants one. Okay.
And some of these...
And did we create more of those?
No. They're being
we just reorganized around that. And as a result of that, then we found we didn't need the services from the instructional assistant special education. Is that what you're telling me?
No. The ones that there are special ed assistants, which is a whole different thing.
Right.
The RTI model is the instructional assistant ones.
Okay.
And some schools had several, some schools had one. So what they are now doing is they will be sent out to the schools as needed. They will be realigned. So we really,
without an increase in employees.
Correct.
Okay. So then what were these instructional assistant special education, the three that were laying off tonight?
Those three were vacant positions that we had.
Yes. We're repeating ourselves. So I just want to make sure, because it is it's important to hear the message. Where there were vacancies, they were not filled.
Right.
No one had a position. Okay, here, this is important. No one had a position and was told, you no longer have a job.
I didn't say that.
Okay.
I'm just trying to find out. Okay, the three that we're laying off, the discontinued positions.
The vacant positions.
Yeah, the layoffs.
The vacant positions are being closed, and instead...
Okay. Well, you know, we're using semantics, but if you go to the top of page 10B, it says resolution for layoff of classified employees. So that's why I was using the word layoff.
Oh, you know, okay, even though there's no body. Even though there's no body.
Right.
Okay, I get you.
So I'm using the word layoffs.
Okay.
I know that was a problem at the last meeting, too, but it's called a resolution for layoff for classified employees, so I don't have a problem using the word layoff.
Okay, so you're basically saying that you are aware that no one person in our district has been laid off. You're saying that you understand that a position that was vacant was closed, and therefore you're going to call that a layoff even if it was vacant.
I am going by the resolution for layoff of classified employees.
Yes.
Is that okay? Am I allowed to use the words that are in the resolution title?
That's the resolution.
That wasn't the question. That wasn't the question she asked.
Right.
I'm asking about services, okay?
Yeah.
I'm worried about services.
Okay.
Whether there's people in here or not, you know, we can talk about
right.
that. But I want to talk about services.
Right.
So I want to know, on the three instructional assistant special education,
mm-hmm.
what were those positions that were eliminated?
There is one at Edgewood Middle School. It's ASRD, which is autism. And there are two at West Covina High School, which are ASRD autism.
Okay. And the district felt there wasn't a need to fill those.
Correct.
They are vacant positions.
Well, I know they're vacant positions. But
correct.
We had no need at this time. Correct.
Okay. So our numbers are down in those fields?
No. They're getting support through the reorganization. I don't know why you don't want to hear that.
No. I heard that, but I'm just trying to get an idea. So they would not normally, no, you reorganized,
right?
And you have now these assistant ones that I don't know what they were doing. I guess that they have more time to deal with actual services. Is that correct? Because we're using the same amount of people, because you told me there was no increase.
Correct.
Okay. So now we're using them more efficiently.
Correct.
So that we don't need these three special education assistants.
Correct.
Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Because our numbers haven't gone down.
No.
And our services, and you're saying our services haven't gone down.
No.
Okay. The reduced positions, the media center ones, mm-hmm. kind of curious about this.
Well, many people, can I say something about that? Or you have a question about it?
I had questions, but.
Okay, go ahead.
I can't.
Go ahead.
I don't know.
Go ahead.
What do you want to do?
Finish your question, and then she'll make sure that she thoroughly answers it. Yes.
Okay, from the looks of it, there's 5-6 media center assistants that are reducing down to 4 hours.
That's correct.
Okay, so do all our elementary schools now, will they have 4 hours?
Yes.
Okay, so the other ones already have 4 hour.
Correct.
Okay, now what were they doing differently that's not going to happen now since we're reducing, I'm assuming, and maybe that's, you know, that's the wrong word, but if you have a 7-6 and a 5.5 hours reduced to 4-4-4, what were they doing that's not going to be done this next time?
Let me tell you, when this first position first started, it was funded by a library grant, and everybody had 4 hours. Mm-hmm. As time went on and we had more categorical funds, people that schools could choose to, if they chose to, increase the hours. And now we're cutting the categorical hours and actually it's aligning it so everyone has the same amount of hours.
I understand everybody will have the same amount of hours. So this is part of when we shifted money from the categorical monies to the general fund.
Correct.
Okay, so this is part of that impact?
Yes.
Okay. So what were they doing with that special, with the categorical funding that's not going to be done by reducing their hours?
I just want to clarify that the money that was captured from the reduction of rate going to the general fund, that is not money that would be going to the general fund. The monies in SIP have been reduced. And so because there is less money...
Well, are all these SIP positions, or are they categorical? Because, I mean, categorical and SIP is just one categorical. So, I mean...
Correct.
Right, so were all these SIP money, or what was...
For the media assistance, they were being paid out of.
All of them were SIP?
All except for one who had, actually, because of the expenditures on the campus, had moved into a little bit of gate, in
correct.
Which we were having to then realign because they could not use gate money. So the media center clerks and what they were doing, I cannot speak highly enough. They're quality, wonderful people mm-hmm. who go above and beyond often. As once upon a time this was paid for our grant. The state gave a lot of library money.
Right.
They reduced it, no longer existed. They attached it to SIP with no money. We've now taken a 15-point-something cut, and they're going to take another... 5%.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And so the school site councils all got together and voted to reduce these positions then? The SIP ones, not the one that came from GATE?
It's about the funding of how we can use the categorical, and this became 100% expenditure of site categorical, which then caused other issues with
So that meant that the school site council then met and decided that this is what they wanted to reduce on that campus?
I would have to clarify with the principal with how they talked with their school site council.
Oh, thank you.
Okay. So that's not a yes?
It's not a yes or no.
Okay.
Okay, but also you need to understand that when the principals, and this is why I'll let any staff answer your questions, but there is no simple yes no, and that's what I wanted,
and that's why I can't get yes and no's. I got that.
That's why I wanted to explain that categoricals have been reduced, school operating budgets have been reduced. They have a certain amount of money, right? In that certain amount of money, there's a whole plan that's been aligned to the school meeting its target. Okay, and the schools have prioritized, the school principals, let's say right now, have prioritized how they feel their school can best be aligned to their goals. One of the things that everyone said was, even though we love our media center assistance, okay, there's an inequity in this district about how that has been distributed. There are other things in this district that were not distributed appropriately. We have schools that had categorical monies that really are not entitled to them. There's been a lot of work to ensure that we are not only complying with the rules, but using the resources to the best of our ability to align. In addition, we worked very hard to make sure that everyone had their job and the benefits. Okay, so everything's proportional, but one of the things when you say, did the SI council meet, some of them don't have enough money to fund a position. Some SI councils do not have enough money.
No, but the reason I asked that question is because, first I thought it was that, and we had this presentation at the budget, was that we did take money out of categoricals and assign that to general fund expenses. We did increase that.
See, when you say that, the way you're saying it isn't necessarily the way I would say it, because it doesn't reflect.
Well, that's what we did, though. I mean, we can look at the pie charts and the money. I mean, when we talked about the money we were doing.
No.
We had this discussion at our last meeting.
No, because if you say that on the record, then the district could be non-compliant. And we're not. Okay, by you saying that, you're saying on the record that we've allowed our district to be in non-compliance because we took that money and put it over here. That's not what happened.
Shifted expenses.
That's not what happened.
Okay, that's fine. That's not what happened.
Okay.
But the SIP has a particular component where it asks for school site council approval, and we approve all those plans at the beginning of the year.
You approve school plans, yes.
Yeah, we approve the school plans that are brought to us by the school. So that's why there's an equity, when you say there's an equity in these positions, is because the school site councils sent us plans that had those priorities in it.
No, that's incorrect.
Well, then
incorrect.
How did you get funded out of SIP?
Because the district was supplementing schools that
didn't. How did you get out of SIP then?
The districts were giving the money, okay, that the district no longer has, so that they would have a minimum of 4 hours. So a school like California always had less hours. Okay, because they don't bring in the money based on their student population. They don't bring in that money.
That's why they're being reduced less than some of the others.
So no. So yeah. The concept is when looking at their categoricals. Okay, how are their categoricals in compliance based on the needs they've expressed they had? Okay, and then how do we provide support and equity to all? So for example, what Tandy said, which I don't think was as clear as it could be, is that in many ways we're going to have to bring people and send them out to create the equity because a school can't afford it, but yet we want them to have the support. Is that correct?
Well, that's with Media Center clerks?
Not with Media Center clerks, but with categorical funds, yes.
With categorical funds.
Yes.
Okay, but I'm trying to figure out what services that they did with the SIP money or the funds allocated to the site that isn't going to be done now because of the reduction.
Well,
that's what I want to get an idea about.
Tandy.
Some schools open their libraries before or after school. The media center clerks often run supplemental, because under categoricals you have to do supplemental activities, such as the accelerated reader in tracking that. Some of them do things such as story time or things that are above and beyond what would be their general job description of the media clerk. So principals have created at each site activities that are aligned to a school's needs with those categoricals based on, yes, those school plans, in which for this year, all media clerks are retaining their hours until the end of the school calendar year. So we are not reducing any of that. So for this year's monies, there is no money that's being reallocated.
I understand that. This is for the future for... That's why we're doing the resolution for layoff of classified employees now. I understand that.
Can we just piggyback, though, on your statement that the after school. Since there is now an after school program that is a partner with us in providing after school programs, and since Orchard is part of that after school program, in essence, even though the media clerk won't be providing it, it will be provided to our students with another support service provider.
Right. And so just the before school wouldn't. And exactly. ACEs, there was limits on actually...
Let me correct you there. In many ways, some of our principals, such as Orangewood, have said that they'll use their supplemental hours to do before-school tutoring. So at every point where it was going to be targeted at the student, mm-hmm. okay, it may not be the same provider, but the reorganization continues a lot of the support.
Okay, then where is that coming from?
The YACES and the supplemental.
Oh, YACES, yeah, YACES, and then...
And then supplemental.
I don't know if we ever settled that fee issue that got brought up at the one meeting.
Yeah, we did.
You know, and access to that. Because the reason is, you know, we spent a lot of money setting up World of Reading libraries.
Yes, and we want them open before,
and
during, after
school. And they
school.
Need to be utilized.
And they will be. Just won't
but
be the
But they're not
going
to be used the same way they were school, though.
Say that again?
But the school site is still having flexibility on how they're used, based on what you just told me.
No. Every school
well, you
has...
You told me that not everyone's going to have before-school tutoring, right?
Every school gets to decide how their supplemental hours are used, but the YACES is available.
Okay, so what money does the school site council still have input into?
The same, just a smaller pot. Same areas, smaller pot.
But these were not a. These aren't. These are happening next year, but they're not necessarily parts of their. What if? Well, I guess I'm not going to get that. Thank you.
Jessica, do you have anything?
Steve.
Yeah, I guess I'll kind of follow up and just make sure I understand. So my understanding is, out of all of the media clerk positions, are there any of them that are funded out of general funds?
Hours of each person's salary is out of general fund.
All of them. I mean, I'm talking elementary right now.
Yes.
And the district could say, we want to save general funds. Let's not fund the media clerk. Let's let the SI council decide whether to fund them or not. But sure. We decided that we value the 4 hours of support. The principals had the same feeling, and we felt we could still meet student needs with the augmented services.
Fine. So, no, I understand. Okay, so general fund, 4 hours, across the board, elementary. The additional hours that would have had to been paid out of?
School improvement.
So, in effect, each school improvement council, school improvement program council, made their own decision to say, we don't have the resources anymore in our site council money to continue to provide those additional hours.
Correct. And the funding has gone down and will go for next year. As we move to Title I,
okay.
It would become a compliance.
Let me try to explain that. Good question, Mr. Cox.
Why, thank you.
Here's the answer to your question. There are two pools of funds coming to us that are called categoricals, right? The pool that comes in terms of the student draw, elementary, secondaries, is pretty much the same, Title I, SI.
Okay.
The elementaries are going to have Title I. The secondaries are going to have SI. For program reasons, for compliant reasons, and for aligning it to their resources. So there will not be school improvement funds at the elementary level. We decided to go ahead and use general funds to fund 4 hours of the media clerk. Had we not done that, they would not have had a job at all.
Right.
Because they will not have a dime of SI money.
Don't we fund four now, though? Is that right?
Yeah, we fund four now.
Okay.
Yeah.
But
we weren't going to have four schools have it and the rest not.
All right, so we don't have, so there's no school SIP money at the elementary.
Correct.
But there was this year, this
correct.
8-9 school year, there
correct.
Was.
Yes.
And now it's all going to the high school?
Middle school. And high school. Three middle schools, one high school, one continuation.
And that was completely different. And these extra hours were funded out of those SI funds that are no longer available.
Exactly.
So then the only way that the school, beyond the general fund, the only way that the elementary schools could do that, it would be then out of their Title I money?
Title I money would...
I mean, if they wanted it, they would have to make a conscientious effort to recharacterize money set aside for those purposes.
They'd either have to eliminate Title I aides or media clerk time, in addition, you know, after the 4 hours. Because right now they're using their money for their aides. So if they take and they augment, they won't have both. They'd have one or the other.
Need the detail necessarily as to where or what, but what I'm getting at is that it becomes then still part of the school site council.
No.
Remember
that Title I is an advisory group, not a decision-making group. A Title I council is advisory to the principal.
Okay, so it's the principal's decision then?
The principal, working with the school, working with Tandy, have realigned. Remember that Title I is going to also be a program that has compliance issues, and so they have to meet what their school plan says. And so they don't have enough money to do all the things they wanted to do.
Okay, so it's not a vote thing, because when I was on a school site council, we actually voted for a budget that was presented to the Board of Education. That's not done anymore then?
If you're on a school site council for school improvement
for
money.
For school improvement?
Yes.
Oh, see, what
if
we
you're
did,
Title
what it
one,
seemed like
no.
We moved all of the monies, and this is a long time ago. I'm old.
You are.
I know. So they don't move that SI money and all that money into one pool in effect and then make those decisions?
No.
Okay, so the Title I is just strictly advisory. And so on the advice of the school, the parents, the stakeholders that are involved at the school site, they decided that we reduce these hours.
Well, that is...
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Rough idea about how many kids these... the media clerks will see in a day? will they see the entire school?
No.
They've never seen the entire school in a day. I mean, I guess they could as they
more?
Go by, but they go
half?
Every class. It would be dependent on our schools, and how they structure the time within the media center and how much time they want to allow for session and going in. Do they just want them to run through, grab a book, and go out? I mean, you can do one kit. If they want them to come out and experience the library, then they're going to have to structure it in a different way.
So in a typical day, if you and I sat at a typical elementary school to see how many, I mean, does every single class, I just can't imagine that. I mean, are we talking 500 in a day that'll pass through the media center?
Yeah, we wish. Huh? We wish.
No.
We wish. Okay, Mr. Cox, how many hours are there
right, so,
in a school day?
So 100, so would there be 100? Yeah, I'm trying
to
get
some.
You
can do the math.
Yeah, I can. That's amazing, huh?
Mm-hmm. You're very good at it.
So 125, 500 a week? 500 a week, probably, 100?
On a good 100.
Week.
So on a 4 hour, so
very
25?
Very rarely, very rarely.
Rarely?
Mm-hmm.
So a classroom a day, maybe, roughly, equivalent?
More than a classroom a day. I would say probably 1.5 hour, if not two, depending on if they're one or two, depending on what is happening. If a class is coming in from a certain, a teacher may go in and pre-select things and bring a class in there.
Mm.
Roughly, I would say.
No, it's maybe not so important, but.
Many, they're very talented people.
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm there.
Mr. Fuller?
Let me just clarify. When I've been on the school sites and seen what goes on in the media center, the media clerk works with the teacher who's bringing in the children, and both of them collaborating together deliver services to the child, right? From what I've seen. In other words, the media clerk is in there, the teacher comes in, they collaborate, the media clerk presents what's going to work well with the kids along with the teacher, and working together, the children are delivered services. So if you remove the media clerk and they've already spent an hour with the teacher and they remove it, you lose your span of control for the teacher goes greater, but the expertise is not overall lost because they've had a chance to collaborate for an hour before they get in there on what they want to accomplish on their goal.
Hypothetically, yes.
Mm-hmm. Right. So if you suddenly find yourself without an instructional aide, say, in a classroom. Instructional aide is there 3 hours and then is gone. Your span of control goes greater, but you don't necessarily have to reduce the number of services for the child. It just would be greater emphasis and more service if you had the instructional aide there in a classroom, right?
Yes.
So the child is still receiving services.
Yes.
Maybe not in the manner that we would like, but they're still receiving services and they're still getting
what
they need, even though some of the personnel may not be able to be there as long as we like.
I think you make a very good distinction about what we would like and what we can afford.
Right.
And at the same time, provide our students with what they need.
Right. Works for me.
Mr. Spence?
I had another question. Since the school improvement money was folded into the school library grant program, and we're only going to do it, I guess, at the middle school and high school. Are those funds then being used to fund those positions?
No. General fund. All media clerk positions will be general fund.
And the certificated media teacher as well?
Because at the elementary, they're media 1, media 2, media 3.
Right. And the certificated teacher that we brought in at the high school? Librarian?
Oh, what about her position?
No, are those all funded by the
general
school?
General fund. General fund.
Those are all. So they're not funded by the school library grant or the school.
There's no more school library grant.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you said there was. Yeah. The school SIP a few years ago got folded into the school library grant.
There was no money, but they added the library.
Yeah, grant. But they put it all in the library. But they called it, I think, the school library grant.
That is part of the title.
Yeah. Right.
No money folded into
it. Right, but the SIP money was folded into it. There was no extra money, because you just said we were going to do it at the middle school and high school.
Well, it's smoke and mirrors. They took three programs, one pot of money, and said,
"I was just trying to figure out if we're going to use them to fund our school personnel."
But it is general fund, right?
I guess we'll see when we get the school improvement plans. for our approval. The certificated media teacher at the high school, what is their interaction with our elementary libraries?
The teacher?
Yeah, the certificated media librarian, the certificated librarian, school librarian.
I know Mr. Cook has been working with her and trying to establish her to be able to set up meetings and opportunities with the elementary. So this year has been much of a training and understanding, because this is her first year of establishing at the high school, to be able to offer them expertise and support. And I know we have some here that probably can offer much expertise the other way as well. But as I said, Mr. Cook has really been working with her this year. She's established herself at the high school.
Because we've had that position for 3-4 years now, something like
that? Well, the position has been vacant for a long time. We just hired a person. I understand she's also been ill part of the year.
Well, wouldn't we save money by going back to the certificate? Because it cost us more when we shifted to the certificated position there when it first was a media clerk. Wouldn't we save money if we... I mean, there were all these promises made when the board approved making it a certificated position, and I don't know if any of them have ever come about, but I'm just thinking if you're going to reduce a position, that would save money that then could be used for by going back to the clerk model at the high school.
Well, I don't know. I mean,
because, you know, we were made lots of promises when that was elevated.
Okay. I wasn't here, so I don't know what promises were made.
Promises were made. And we had a review after 1 year, and after 1 year, they said, well, they really hadn't filled it and hadn't done anything.
It is something that I would say we would probably should discuss for another year, like maybe next year. But right now she's trying to get this year under her belt, trying to coordinate the things that her job description, which is, you know, a number of things that she has to do.
And one of them dealt with elementary schools, too.
Yeah, I know.
And it doesn't sound like that's happening.
Yes, well, she's been sick. Well. Mr. Cook has been working with her to do all of the things that are in her job description.
Thank you.
Any further comments? Discussion? Is there a motion on this item?
I'll move.
Is there a second? It was moved by Mr. Fuller, seconded by Jessica Shoemaker. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Opposed.
It passes 4-1, with Mike Spence being the no vote. Mr. Spence, you took off number 11.
Yes, I did, because I would like to separate. I'll move approval of this with the separation of item on page C0903496. Because I would like to propose the settlement.
I'll second.
It's been moved and seconded, with the exception of 0903496.
Mm-hmm.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Nay. Oh, wait. That's all right. That's all
okay. Right. It passes unanimously. Is there a motion for item number 0903496?
I'll move, but I have a question. Let me give a second.
It was seconded by Jessica Shoemaker.
The question is, this is a result of a negotiated settlement between involving district personnel?
Yes.
Thank you.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
It passes 4-1, with Mike Spence being the no vote. The meeting will... Is there any other further board discussion?
I would like to agendize discussion of the Air Force ROTC program at the high school. I talked to a parent the other day that wasn't aware that it was going to be eliminated, and we haven't taken board action to eliminate it, so I'd like to at least discuss it, and I, for one, want there's long-term effects if we were to get rid of it, because it would be hard to get back, so I'd like to have some discussion about the Air Force ROTC program.
If we are going to agendize, I'd like to see what other services may want to come in and what the response would be.
Well, we can agendize it. I think we have statistics to show you we just don't have kids interested. It's not because we want to close the class, but we should bring it forward.
Because I think there's some issues with the certificated, we've had issues with the certificate personnel there, too.
Okay.
And so I think before we, jump to eliminating it, we need to talk about that.
We have been put on notice by them that they're going to eliminate it because we can't get the number of kids. We're not choosing to eliminate it. It's being eliminated because we don't have the interest in it, and the services says you can't have a teacher if you're not going to have X amount of students. So we've been carrying two teachers, which they pay for half and we pay for half, more or less, with 30 kids, with two teachers.
Right, but there was a time when there was a lot of interest, and I think because
I think it was only year one.
Problems with the program, that's what I want to talk about.
Okay.
And if we're going to discontinue it, we should let parents know at some point.
Well, we're not discontinuing it. I want to put that on the record again. If it gets discontinued, it gets discontinued.
Well, let's discuss it.
Yeah, we will.
Further discussion? We will be closing at 8:20.